You're listening to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
We're working like heck.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. This is The Drive rolling along here today on this wonderful Friday afternoon. As we get things rolling here on The Drive, I got a special interview coming up here in just right when we get Russell back connected. This is going to be good. I'm excited for this one. EJ Anowski is going to join us here in just a second. We're going to talk about his decision to come to Tennessee, and he'll be a grad transfer. Excited to have him on with us. He'll be coming on here in just a minute. Just an interesting day so far. If you're sitting at home, Tennessee Takeover Day is going on the SEC Network right now. You've got the Volunteers in Kentucky playing from last season, 2019.
Russ, I didn't hit anything. I don't know what happened.
It's all good, man.
All right, we'll get you back on. I'll call EJ. Sorry about that.
No, all right. Just tell me when.
You got me?
Okay, I guess we don't. Bear with Anasicki's going to join us here in just a minute. Excited to have EJ on with us and somebody that we're going to get used to. And if Tanner, you want to go ahead, we'll give him a call, and yeah, we'll get things rolling on. Excited to have him. Bear, what's up with you, bud? You good?
Yeah, not too bad. Had some plumbing issues today, but got them taken care of fairly quickly. So,
well, that's good, then. Well, Russell joins us now. What's up, Russ?
Hey, guys, you got me?
I got you, man.
All right, sounds good. Sorry about that. A little technical difficulty to start the show. Hopefully that's not a harbinger of things to come, you know?
Well, we got a big right. 3 o'clock hour today, so I hope not.
Yeah, no, we got a lot to get to for sure. It's another beautiful day. Here's what I want y'all to do. Not you and Bear, Trey. You guys are already good with me here for the next 3 hours. But I want the audience to go and make sure your phone is properly charged. Get your favorite pair of headphones, earbuds, ear pods, whatever you got. Get out. Let's go get a walk. Listen to The Drive together. We got an action-packed first hour for you. Okay, maybe you've already taken a long walk. Maybe you're tired. Get out there on the porch. Crack open an ice-cold beer. I drink beer. We like beer. Still like beer. Go check them out. Get outside, and let's enjoy this beautiful spring day and hopefully a great addition of The Drive. All right, let's get things started. We've got EJ Anasicki on the line. Good afternoon, EJ. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Hey, man, we're doing very well. Thanks for jumping on with us. Sorry we're a little late getting with you. A little technical difficulties here as we're doing the show from quarantine, which kind of makes things difficult at times. But we got you now, and hope you're doing well.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Right on, man. Well, big day for you as you make a decision, a big decision, a life-altering decision, potentially, and you choose to come to Tennessee for your final year of eligibility. What made you choose Rocky Top?
I always felt like I was a part of the culture here in Tennessee, especially since I was young. Growing up, I watched my sister play here. I was 6 years old when I went to my first Final Four. Watching her play in Indianapolis. Seen her win two national championships here. And ever since then, I always felt like Tennessee was a place that I wanted to be. Like, it was my dream. And I seen Tennessee win at a high level. And I want to have that same experience here at Tennessee.
Nikki Anasicki joining us on the... I'm sorry, EJ. See, I got your sister on the mind, all of us. First of all, how is Nikki Anasicki? What's she up to these days?
She's just doing her thing, training. She's really staying in the Knoxville area, giving me support, especially in my development as a player. So She always gave me advice and helping me improve my game and giving me tips. She has been a great big sister to me.
Very cool, man. Well, we give her our best from Rocky Top. We certainly remember her, a part of a couple national championship teams back in the heyday of Lady Vol basketball and Pat Summitt. EJ, how difficult was this process for you, being a grad transfer with everything that's going on in the world right now with the virus and you not being able to take visits to the places you were considering? How difficult was the process for you?
I felt that it was different from what the traditional recruiting process is. I felt like despite everything that's going on in the world, that there's a way that I got to make it work, especially when making a decision like this. So it required me watching a lot of film, developing relationships with coaches, and ultimately seeing where I fit in best and where I'll be comfortable. So that's definitely how I use this time, especially the downtime with everything we have to be in the house. I had a lot more time on my hands, so I definitely used it to my advantage.
EJ, this is Trey, buddy. When you had conversations with the coaches about coming to Tennessee, talk to me about what you saw in Rick Barnes and Kim Inglis and Coach Schwartz and everybody on the Tennessee staff. But what kind of conversations did they have with you about how they're going to be able to use you in your skill set next year? And how's that relationship, do you think, being built up with the staff in Tennessee?
I feel like when the initial conversation I had with the coaches, it was clear they want to win a national championship, and that's one of my goals as well. So the conversation was really from a winning standpoint. And I've been watching Coach Barnes coach and his system. I've been watching Tennessee basketball ever since I was young. So I just felt that his system would be great for me, and I could really thrive in the system and help what he's trying to do. And I felt like he felt that I could be a big part in what they want to do and to help them win a national championship next year.
When you look at, and I'm pretty sure you have, when you look at the roster that Tennessee will have coming in next year and some true freshmen that are coming in, some highly regarded true freshmen, but you also have the returning players. You know, you have a John Fulkerson, you have an Eve Pons, Victor Bailey will be playing, Euros is around Santiago. So have you had any kind of conversations with them yet? Have they reached out to you? But then also, you know, when you looked at the Tennessee roster, did you see the potential there for you to be able to achieve the goals that you wanted to in committing and signing with Tennessee?
Absolutely. I definitely felt that Tennessee was a great team on all aspects and all cylinders, and I just felt that I just want to be a part of something like that, be a part of a great team, and just help them contribute to the best of my ability. I feel that we all got a common goal, and that's to win. And I definitely want to be a part of that and help continue to win in coaching here at Tennessee.
EJ, what is it about Knoxville, EJ? What is it about the town and you growing up, you know, coming to games here at Thompson Bowling Arena, you getting to watch your sister. But what is it about East Tennessee that made you feel comfortable in the fan base around here that made you feel comfortable in choosing the Volunteers?
Just the familiarity I had with it growing up, especially being around my sister and supporting her during her career here. I went to her senior night, so I seen TBA being sold out and packed house. And once I stepped on the floor, I knew it was the place that I wanted to be.
We got EJ Anasicki joining us here this afternoon on The Drive. He announces today that he is committed to attend Tennessee as a grad transfer, choosing the Vols over Gonzaga, Louisville, a couple of other schools that he was considering as well. And EJ, when you talk to Coach Barnes through this, what has he told you about his vision for you and how he plans to use you next year at Tennessee?
When I spoke to Coach Barnes, we talked about winning. That's really what the conversation was about, like us wanting to win and me doing everything I could in my power and give it all I got and just continue to work hard and do what I do to help the team win and contribute. So I feel like whatever is necessary that needs to be done will be taken care of. And he felt that I would be a big part and have a big role in to help his team win and to help him achieve everyone's goals is to win a national championship.
Has he told you anything about what position he might see you playing?
We didn't really go in depth about that because my game, his offense, everyone's involved. So really is everyone could be in any given position at any given time. Defensively, they do a great job switching. So it's really just the more versatile you are, the more you benefit. And I felt like that just fitted my game the best.
Now, you're a big guy, 6'6", 240 pounds. Is that accurate? And obviously, that your rebounding numbers seem like you're a guy that can play inside, which was an area that Tennessee struggled at times this year. Is that size on you accurate? And do you think that's kind of a major part of what you bring to the table next year for the Vols?
Absolutely. I definitely take a lot of pride in my body and working on it to be the best possible shape I could be. I feel like rebounding is something I do really well. I feel like that's something I could definitely bring to the table and help the team with. So I definitely could believe that that's something I'll bring to the table come next year.
EJ, last question for me, man, and we really appreciate you coming on, and congratulations again on making your announcement and decision. There's a lot of it's up in the air of when things get going and when you can report to campus and start taking classes. What is something you'll be looking at and studying, you know, this next year? But also on the second part of that, have they kind of given you a timeline yet of, you know, maybe when you can start getting on campus and start working?
Well, in regards to what I'm choosing my master's in, I'm kind of figuring it out, talking to my family, deciding what's the best option, where I should take that route. And as far as for me to get on campus, hopefully once everything clears up in the world, then we can start figuring that stuff out. But as of right now, it's just me making a decision and saying that I'll be coming to Tennessee next year.
Well, EJ, congratulations, man, on the big decision. I know Tennessee fans are looking forward to seeing you in the orange and white next year. And like you say, hopefully we get past all this stuff and everybody gets healthy and we can get on with the sports world and a full college basketball next season, man. Enjoy your off season. Again, say hello to Nikki and the fam for us. And we look forward to seeing you in Knoxville here, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, EJ.
Thank you. That's EJ Anasicki, the newest member of the Tennessee roster. It, boy, when you look at the roster that's set now and all 13 scholarships are accounted for, you never know. Maybe there's another player leaves or not. I know that Tennessee would still love to add Musa Cisse. Somebody obviously would have a scholarship, would have to clear up for that now. But let's just assume for a minute that Tennessee's done and this is a 13-man roster and everybody will presumably be eligible. There will be no, you know, is Plavsic going to play, adding Vescovi. You're going to have 13 guys who would appear to be healthy coming back next year and a really good roster, depth, competitive. Going to be some guys who probably that you saw play a little bit this year who are going to have trouble carving out minutes next year. But my goodness, from a season where it felt like Rick Barnes was always trying to plug a hole in the dam, you know, and every time he would get one plugged, another one would leak. It really looks, Trey, that next year's team is going to be loaded.
My man, I mean, I look at this roster now and I'm sitting here looking at it right now, what it would look like for next season. This is loaded. And here's the good thing about that, Russ. You're going to have a player like EJ come in who is a veteran in college basketball. You're going to have guys like Fulkerson and Pons coming back and Santiago and more. You're going to have veterans that are going to be able to try to help Tennessee get going at first. and let these freshmen that are coming in get used to this game. And Triple J, you know, him being able to come back and get his game even better. So what I'm getting at is this is just perfect for Tennessee. This is exactly what they needed, a veteran-type guy to come in and help lead this team. And, man, it's going to be fun to watch this basketball squad next year. And, you know, one area where Tennessee probably needed to get better at was rebounding. And I think you just added that piece along with some scoring as well. So, hey, look, Tennessee's going to have a lot of playmakers next year. It'll be interesting to see how much they spread the ball around. But you know what? This is a stacked roster. And to me, this is a top 15 team right off the bat.
All right, very good. Stay with us. We'll take a quick break, get things rolling. We'll get the Bear in here when we continue and see what's been up at the Bear's Den the past 21 hours or so. You never know what that guy's getting into under quarantine. Stay tuned. It's The Drive on Fan Run Radio. Quick break. We're back with more right after this.
Well, I'm sailing. Yes.
The Drive continues. This edition presented by our friends at National RX. They've got your hand sanitizer. Just saw Sean, friend of the show, was stopped by the Hardin Valley location, Volunteer Pharmacy, and picked up a couple of bottles. And they've got them for you both, Volunteer Pharmacy, Hardin Valley, and National RX in Farragut. Swing by the drive-thru at National RX. Pick up a couple of bottles. Keep yourself safe and clean. And be sure to let them know Russell sent you The Drive right here on Fan Run Radio. All right, we get back to it here this afternoon. Want to thank EJ Anasicki for joining us off the show. Do you think he was mad that I accidentally called him Mickey, Trey? Was that a faux pas for me? Like, it's an honest mistake, you know?
Anna, what'd you call him? You called him Anasicki?
I called him Nicky.
Nick, Icky and a Sicky? I don't understand what you did. I didn't catch it, so, you know, I don't know.
Do you have any clue, Bear? Do you have any clue what's going on right now? Do you have any idea who this dude is and who his sister is and what's happening? Or are you just stumbling blindly into a conversation, flailing about madly, looking for any frame of reference possible?
Yeah, I mean, he's the kid from Sacred Heart that we got. Not the cathedral school, the university. And I think his sister run track here.
Put Bear on hold. Put Bear on hold. He's bringing absolutely nothing to the table. Trey, have you taken the mute up button off yet? I mean, this is even
yeah,
by
no,
the drive.
I'm here. I'm sorry. I had to take the state of Alabama just issued pretty much a stay at home and ordered all retail businesses and stuff like that to close down. So unfortunately, my mom owns a retail store, a furniture store, and they've closed her down for the next month. So had to comfort her for a second. Family comes first during this time, buddy.
No doubt about it. I mean, it's been a rough start for the show, even by our lofty standards. I mean, we've had some rough starts. We've had some worse starts than this. Hey,
let me tell you something. We just had EJ on.
Stop talking, Trey. You're talking all over me. I got Bear doesn't know what he's doing. I've got Trey on the other line with his mom comforting. I mean, we're just firing on all cylinders right out of the gates here, man. Nobody knows what's going on. It's day 5 in quarantine for the drive, or day 10. Whatever the case may be, it's a beautiful day. All right, let's get rolling here this afternoon. I'm sorry. As we get set, Chris Burke is going to join the festivities here in just a few minutes on the show this afternoon. I have a monster Rickard Ridge barbecue smoking hot question coming your way here in just a second. It's going to really take off here the 4 o'clock hour, I believe. And I believe the biggest news of the day, my biggest accomplishment so far, Trey, is I just finished about 2 hours ago the final episode of The Tiger King. It's a final now. I've completed it.
Really?
Watched all 5 episodes. Where are you?
I finished episode 3 last night. I'm having to take this thing like in steps, brother. like it's almost too much to bear if I watch two or three episodes of one night. Like I'm having to roll like one episode a night type of thing. Like last night was just like Alex Jones InfoWars type craziness with episode 3.
Have you seen the big fat dude who they brought in with like the weird, it's like his hair is kind of long, but not. And he's like a strip club owner and he had the cats and everything. Have you seen that guy yet?
Well, I've seen the video. If this is the same person you're talking about on the jet ski that looks like Danny McBride from Eastbound and Down. Yes.
I mean, this dude is a piece of work and I don't want to spoil it for you or anybody else who might be watching. But the end of that show, you get through it, and you're like, well, there's about 7 hours of my life that I'll never get back. And then you look at it, and you also say, these people, every single person in this documentary was an absolutely awful person. I mean, do you find any of these people likable, Trey?
No, and it's hard for me to, I don't know. No, not really. I don't. I think they're all weird. Like, I've known of the Tiger King for a while, like I've said, but I always found him weird, especially, when he was, everything that was going on. And also the assassin plot, and then him talking about, him launching that website and maybe the body underneath the septic tank. Like, this stuff's just wild. But you know what? It's like Last Chance U for wildlife keepers. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's weird. But it's cool. Same time.
The things they've done with these documentaries on Netflix are incredible. The way, the documentary used to be like a kind of a nerdy thing, every now and then there'd be a really cool one that people would watch, but now like the Netflix documentaries are better than the movies. Remember when Netflix first came out, like it was a movie delivery service. Now nobody watches movies on Netflix. It's all either TV shows or these documentary series.
Well, I think they've gotten better at what they do and how they come up with these, because what happens is these are not so-called Netflix shows. What happens is these guys go out, and this is a production company that shoots these, and then they sell the rights to Netflix. And I think Netflix has done a really good job of trying to find the best type of content to put on their shows. And, it's grown, and it makes it a heck of a lot better, and I'm sure Chris Berg's probably watching on Netflix. He's about to join us, and it's better than having to get a DVD in the mail, watch it, then repackage it, send it back, and then wait for another one to come. So I love what they're doing.
Yeah, the thing I don't miss about those days, remember you get that DVD, but then there was like this weird pressure to watch it and then send it back. It is a very cool thing as we welcome Chris Burke to the show this afternoon. Chris, you got Russell Smith, Trey Wallace on a Friday afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
Hey, we're doing all right. Thanks for jumping on. And first of all, just how are you and your family holding up during everything that's going on right now?
Man, we're doing really well. Thanks for asking. Online school has been a bit of an adjustment, but kids are knocking that out pretty well when the Wi-Fi cooperates. And other than that, man, we're fortunate. I think Kentucky as a whole has done a really good job with this deal. There's very few cases, relatively speaking, and we got five kiddos running around this house. So there's definitely no boredom. I will tell you that. But my heart goes out to all those that are struggling, especially in some of these big metropolitan areas, and even here locally, I'm fortunate to work with an organization that serves kids in the inner city of Louisville that are focused on trying to help kids, because you don't realize how many public school kids rely on those meals. So it's a tough time around our country, but the Berks, we're trying to make the most of things and enjoying our downtime, because it's definitely been a change to our schedule.
Very good. So you got little kids in the house, and you're trying to make sure their education continues, and try and keep up with all the folks you know up there in Louisville and all that stuff. What are you doing as far as downtime? Do you get to get outside and throw the ball around with the little ones?
Yeah.
Or you watch a lot of Netflix? What are you into?
No, not into Netflix. Just tons of it's kind of like a mini sports academy around here. A lot of basketball, a lot of baseball, and we, you know, fortunately we live on a golf course, and the golf course is still open. So the boys have been getting into golf too. So we try to stay active, try to stay busy, and fill our days with burning a lot of energy off, because these young ones have plenty of it. So definitely not sitting around twiddling our thumbs too much. But I'll be honest with you, man, it's been a change of pace, because usually this is crazy time of the year for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is supposed to be – I think yesterday was scheduled to be opening day. How much do you miss baseball right now?
Well, you know, yeah, it was opening day for Major League Baseball. I was missing the college game a bunch last weekend. I was supposed to be doing Tennessee and Vanderbilt, and, man, that would have been an interesting one. Tennessee was off to a fantastic start. Vanderbilt, of course, the defending national champions. And so, you know, you every once in a while you look at what was, and sometimes you have to pinch yourself like that's not coming back. You know, sometimes you feel like you're on a hold or in some sort of postponement, but the college baseball season's over. You know, just feel bad for all those involved, knowing how much those guys invest in getting ready for that season. And, of course, they had already started to kind of write their story, and then, boom, there it goes. So, you know, there were so many great storylines in the SEC headed into the conference play, and it just never got off the ground.
Chris, this is Trey, and you know, when SEC baseball and college baseball as a whole was when they first made that move of canceling the College World Series, and then, you know, you had to have the conferences come out. I think the Big 12 might have started first, and then the SEC had to make a decision, you know, and everything was put on hold and canceled, and that's completely understandable. But I ask you this, in your opinion, with these seniors, with these juniors, sophomore, freshmen, I don't really care what year they are, in your mind, is on March 30th, and that's Monday, when they make a vote, the NCAA is going to vote on, you know, how to handle eligibility for players. You know, is that something in your mind that you think these guys should get an extra year back no matter the year they were in? Or, you know, is there something else out there that you think might work? Because you're so involved in this game, you know, for us, we're just sports talk hosts and reporters, but I'd love your opinion on this whole situation.
Well, I think the more you read on it, the more you realize that people are torn, because like with a lot of very difficult subjects, you could probably stand on either side of the fence and make a pretty good case. I have a bad feeling that my hope was that it was going to get so messy and that they were probably going to give everybody another year, and that was going to force them to look at the reality of the current state of the game with 11.7 scholarships, 27-man rule of who could be on scholarship, 35-man total rule, and look at it and go, you know what, we haven't done anything in college baseball in almost 30 years. Maybe we need to relook at this deal. But something tells me, and I'm not saying there's anything sideways going on here, but something tells me, especially with the current state of economics for all big business, and we know college athletics is big business, something tells me there's a chance that they're going to look at this deal and go, you know what, we're just going to have to tell these kids, hang with them. And it was a tough break, and everybody's going to have to move on. Like, I really hope that's not the case, but for some reason I'm preparing myself for the worst, that there's a chance that only the seniors are going to get another year back, but maybe none of them are, just because they're going to look at the economics of trying to carry all those extra players. Because you got to remember, this doesn't just affect if there's only going to be five rounds of the draft, then very few players are going to get drafted. Well, if very few players are going to get drafted, well, then they're mostly all going to choose coming back. Well, then if they all choose coming back, you've got this, you know, some of these schools bring in 15, 18, 20 new players, right? So So you got all these new players coming in. Well, what do we do with those kids who we promised them scholarship money to, right? And then you can see where if juniors or seniors come back, you know who plays? Juniors and seniors. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the guys or the coaches have already proven they've already shown that that's who they trust the most come back. Well, they're just going to be another year bigger, stronger, and wiser. They're going to keep playing those older guys that they trust. And so then the young kids are stockpiled, and they probably want to transfer. I mean, it's a mess, dude. It's a mess. Now, there's bigger problems in our world right now, but in our little college baseball bubble, there is no easy answer to this. And something tells me they might just look at it and go, you know what, guys? This is a really bad break, and I'm sorry. I hope that's not the case, but I'm kind of preparing myself for that.
Do you think the amount of money, and this is going to relate to college basketball, but it relates to spring sports. Do you think the amount of money that the NCAA is handing out, which they thought they were going to be able to hand out over $600 million, but now it looks like, you know, maybe only around $220-some-odd million for all Division I schools, which really comes out, I think, at the numbers that I was looking at, right around $650,000 from the NCAA. And I know people might think that's a lot, but when you budget all this stuff, it's really not a lot. So my question is, do you think
that's
stuff like this...
That's a football team.
Right, yeah, exactly. So do you think those kind of numbers will worry the NCAA into potentially making a decision where, hey, look, you know, we don't know if we can afford to have this done, and how do we allocate this money to each conference and each school?
Well, no, that's exactly what I'm getting at. And I'll be honest with you, I think the decision to cancel the season early for a lot of these schools, and I'm not saying by no means am I saying they chose it for this reason, but the net effect, I mean, for most schools, they probably saved a bunch of money by not having spring sports. And I'm not just talking about baseball. I'm talking about all spring sports, you know. There's a few SEC schools that make money on baseball, but you look at all the spring sports, very few of those at any school around the country are money makers, right? So from that standpoint, there's just a lot of economics that go into the decisions that are made, and some of it we know, some of it we don't know. But I think there's going to be somebody and that is going to be standing in that decision-making process that presents the issues that are going to be brought up based on if we give everybody an extra year. And they might just look at it and have to make, you know, they might make a decision that ends up costing a lot of kids their senior season. It would be a shame, but there's not a lot of easy answers with this deal.
Chris Burke with us here this afternoon on The Drive, former Tennessee All-American, first-round pick of the Houston Astros back in the day. And, Chris, you know, baseball's such a spectator sport. I know you don't have a crystal ball as to whether or not we're even going to play Major League Baseball this year, but how much would be lost by playing the games without the fans?
Well, I think at this point, everybody would look at that as being an option, whether they have to start the season that way, right, and then eventually get to a place where the fans can come. I think that would be better if you really think about it. Again, not trying to look at things from an opportunistic standpoint, understanding all that's going on in our country, but if you're Major League Baseball and you can work with the government to figure out a way to approve you to start playing games in the sometime near future with no fans, you'd be the only thing in town, right? Now, again, if they got that approval, the NBA would get the same approval, right? And there would start to be some sort of domino effect of things being back on TV. But I do think it would make sense to stair step in a lot of things in our country to stair step our way back into normalcy, whenever the people that make those decisions deem it time to do that. So I think we'll play baseball this summer, and I could definitely see a scenario where it starts out with no fans and then graduates to being back the way it's always been.
Oh, man, that would be music to a lot of folks' ears. Baseball this summer would be absolutely fantastic as we visit with Chris Burke on the drive this afternoon. Hey, Chris, what are your thoughts as a former Vol on the job that Tony Vitello has done to get Tennessee baseball rolling again, even with this season being truncated as it is? It seems like he's certainly got things headed in the right direction.
Yeah, man, pretty incredible, really. I mean, you know, just following this league like I do, when you look at the time it takes most people to turn around a program, the fact that he did it in year two and got them to a tournament in year two is really remarkable. And then you look at what they were appeared to be poised to do in year three. I don't think you could say enough good things about what him, Frank Anderson, Josh Elander, and their coaching staff have done in a very short period of time, with some disadvantages, honestly. You're in a state with arguably the best program in America. You know, you're in a climate that's not one of the best ones in the league, and you're taking over a program that had essentially been dormant, you know, for close to 15 years, and you hop right in there and jumpstart the thing to the level that they were able to and make a regional final in year two. Pretty remarkable, and I don't expect that deal to slow down.
We talked to Tony on the show last week, and he said that, you know, he's been around World Series teams at Arkansas, and he said that he felt like this team this past year had the look of an Omaha team. That's what he said. You've been on a team that went to Omaha. Do you agree with that?
Well, I'll say this. He knows his team better than me, and he certainly knows what an Omaha team looks like. I was very interested. I think their pitching was going to hold up. I was very interested to see if their offense was as good as they played early. Just because there were some guys that were playing at a pretty high level that we had yet to see do it in the Southeastern Conference. And so to me, that would have been the question mark is could they offensively produced at the level necessary to play above 500 baseball in that conference, because the reality of the SEC, it's been proven time and time again the last decade. If you can go 16-14, 17-13 in that league, you can win the whole thing. I mean, that's just the reality of that conference. And you know, Vanderbilt, when they won their first national championship, they finished sixth in the SEC that year. You know, I think Tennessee was going to be very competitive in the SEC, and I'm not disagreeing with Tony, but from an analyst standpoint, I was still very curious to see how their offense and some of the new pieces that had really jumped out to a hot start, like Zach Daniels, was he going to be able to produce at that kind of level in the SEC? I think the jury was still out on that, but it was going to be a lot of fun watching.
Assuming that we get back to normal, and we're sitting here next year talking about, you know, the meat of the SEC slate in college baseball season, what's the next step for Tennessee baseball to take? Obviously, they made the tournament last year. There was a ton of enthusiasm around this team. They'll lose some nice players, but assuming that Coach Vitello can keep the momentum going, what in your mind is the next step to getting Tennessee baseball back to where it was when you left back in 2001?
Yeah, I think the next step for Tennessee baseball is to host a regional. I think they positioned themselves well to do that with their non-conference win over Texas Tech and Stanford and Houston down there in the Round Rock Classic. And so, you know, again, if they could have parlayed that early season start into a 14, 17, and 13 conference record, they were going to host a regional. And that would have been the next step. And, you know, it's pretty crazy, college baseball. Once you get, especially if you can get to a place where you're hosting a regional, once you do that, it's not easy, but getting to Omaha becomes a very real possibility. Because you think about it, you got to win three games on your home turf, and then maybe you got to go somewhere, maybe you get to stay home. And then you got to beat just one other team, two out of three, which especially for Southeastern Conference teams, like, they've been playing the best teams in the country all year long. And to be 16-14, 17-13, you've obviously won a bunch of series against some teams that are really, really good. So, you know, once you host a regional, it's like, man, all we got to do is win five more games. We're Omaha. three games at home and then go beat somebody two out of three, and we're dancing, right? So that's that next step. And honestly, it looked like they were poised to do it. But again, I don't think that this year was going to be something that was a one-off. I think they're going to be around.
All right, good stuff. Hey, Chris, thanks for jumping on with us this afternoon, shooting the breeze a little bit. Hope you and your family continue to stay safe up there. And hopefully, like you said, we'll have you on again sometime this summer and talk about actual baseball.
That would be great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. That's former Vol Chris Burke joining us here on the show. All right, we got to take a quick break. The first matchup of the day for the King of the Vols bracket has been released. We'll preview that coming up next. You're listening to The Drive. Stay right here. More Fan Run Radio coming up. Rapidly coming to a close here on The Drive. It's Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith, Trey Wallace with you. Bear has been suspended for the first hour of the show today for conduct detrimental to The Drive. We'll see if he can behave himself in hour number two. Meanwhile, Trey, the fifth matchup in the Sweet 16, as we begin day two of the Sweet 16, King of the Vols Bracket Challenge, Nashville Region. 2-seed Dale Ellis versus 6-seed Al Wilson. This is a tough one.
Gracious.
I think Al Wilson is going to win, but, I mean, I didn't see Dale Ellis play. I'm 39, and, like, that was before my time, but I know about him. He was a two-time SEC Player of the Year and a guy that was – like he was, I'm trying to think of a good comparison today. He was like the first, when the 3-point line started in the NBA, whenever that was, the mid 80s, he was the first guy to embrace that as a weapon and was the first lethal NBA 3-point sharpshooter before anybody else. He was really a seminal player, like in, as far as the game changing with the 3-point line.
Kind of like a, I don't know, would a comparison be to Chris Lofton for what he was doing?
Yeah, I was thinking more like maybe a Kendrick Perkins a couple of years ago. And here's the thing.
Okay, Dale, I see what you're saying.
A lot of people don't know this, but he was a back-to-the-basket post-up dude at UT. There's no three-point shot in the early 80s, right? So that wasn't even a thing. But he was just a dude who mauled people. He was kind of a Grant Williams type, if you will. Just a bouncy, athletic guy who could get the ball and just kill you on the block. And he didn't shoot outside much. But then he gets to the NBA and, you know, develops this outside shot. And he was the best three-point shooter in the league for pretty much, you know, all of the late 80s, early 90s. And I think he's going to take it on the chin because Al Wilson is such a fan favorite, but he was a great player, man. And it does look like very early here, 167 votes cast, Al Wilson garnering 82.6% of the vote.
Well, you know, you're talking about the Nashville area in the region. It's also a final now in Nashville. Tennessee has once again beat Kentucky 82-78. In the SEC tournament from 2019, it is now over. It is a final in Nashville again.
Well, there you go. Let's look at some of the finals yesterday in the King of the Vols Challenge. I know we've got we're pressed on time here. Let's see. An hour left. It looks like Eric Berry is going to beat Johnny Majors. I think that's a shocker.
Wow.
55.6% to 44.4%. Chris Lofton is going to beat Condridge Holloway, 67%, 33%. Reggie White is destroying Ernie Grunfeld, 95%, 5%. It's a final now. Shamiqua Holtzclaw has defeated Allen Houston to advance to the Elite Eight in the Memphis region. And I believe that's it for yesterday. So that's kind of where we're at.
I like it. I like it. I'm excited to talk about this more in the second hour.
Hour number two of The Drive. Got your top four at four coming up, and we'll see if we can hook up with a kinder, gentler bear. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Drive. It's Fan Run Radio. Back with more after this.